The following presentation was recorded at Faith Builders. More information on Faith Builders events at fbep.org.
Clayton, were you serious about how many days you've been married? Do you do this on a daily basis?
PDA.
Very good.
See, another 11 days will be 9,600, and that would be a day of celebration.
You do it every 100 days. You have a special.
At 95 would also be symmetrical, and so that would celebrate.
Actually, you just, every day is a day of celebration. That's good. You're a lucky woman. Gerald, you know, you went down through that list of what you've been doing this week, and I got tired. And I kind of repented of what I have here to talk about this evening. I thought it would probably have been better if we would have just come together and maybe played shuffleboard or something. Or at least if just do something, sit out here and tell some stories, maybe. Pretty low impact evening. I want to, though, begin by recounting how God described the political and social situation in Israel quite a while ago. He says this: "There's a conspiracy of her princes within her, like a roaring lion tearing its prey." There's a conspiracy of her princes. He goes on to say, "Her priests do violence to my law and profane my holy things." Her princes, her priests do violence. He goes on. He says, "Her prophets whitewash these deeds for them by false visions and lying divinations." Her princes, her priests, her prophets whitewash these deeds. And he goes on to say, "The people of the land practice extortion and commit robbery." Now, I'm not sure if it's the Lord or Ezekiel that has is into alliteration here, but the princes, the priests, the prophets, the people, and I'm just getting that straight out of the book. I'm not mapping that on. But there's a problem here. And in the midst of that problem, what does the Lord say? And that next verse is one that I'm sure is very familiar to us, but it's this. God says, "I looked for a man among them who would build up the wall and stand before me in the gap on behalf of the land." I looked for a man. When God has something he wants to do, he looks for a person. He looks for someone like you. Looks for someone like us. Now, I find that pretty exciting. I find a lot of hope in that. So he looks for a person. And then he says, "This is the kind of person I'm looking for." And he gives four characteristics. He says, first of all, "I look for a man who would build up the wall." I'm looking for someone who has the capacity to see what needs to happen and actually do that. Someone who can see needs and contribute toward those needs. "I look for a man who could build up the wall." It goes on. And he says, "I look for a man who could build up the wall and stand before me." Stand before me. The image there is a military image. The kind of image of someone standing, receiving orders. God says, "I'm looking for a man who can build, who sees the needs and is willing to be engaged in those needs, and who does it under direction from me." A person who's receiving their direction, their orders, their guidance from the Lord. Goes on. "So I'm looking for someone who'll build up the wall, stand before me in the gap." In the gap. Now, the gap's where you need a wall. But there's no wall there. It's a place of loneliness. It's a place where no one else is. No one else is really working. That's why it's a gap. A person who's willing to actually move into those places, maybe unpopular places, but clearly places that demand strength, that demand a willingness to stand alone. And he goes on. I'm looking for a man who'll build up the wall, stand before me in the gap on behalf of the land. See, this is someone who is living for something more than just themselves. The world is bigger than just what I want to do. They're doing it on behalf of others, on behalf of something bigger, something larger. I'm convinced that one of the biggest gaps that we have in our schools is in the role of the administrator. Now, I know I'm not talking about your school, but all the other schools. Relax. I was asked, and I know that I'm not unusual here. I was asked to be a principal, an administrator, at 21 or 22 years of age. I'd never taught before. I go into the classroom at 22, and I'm expected to teach full-time and also administrate full-time. Now, it wasn't that large of a school, 40, 45 students. I found myself after two or three years telling my wife, I so wish I could be in a school where all I had to do was teach. Because administration felt like such a drag. My vision was for the classroom, for teaching, not for the administrative pieces. And Cynthia reminded me of this a year or two ago, that I had said that. But you know, I think over the years, I've begun to develop a vision for what the administrator can do for our schools and the need for the administrative work and involvement. As a people, we tend to be entrepreneurial. I suspect there is a higher percentage of self-employed people among conservative Anabaptists than most people groups. Maybe with the exception of the Jews, I don't know. But for a lot of people groups, we have more self-employed. Now, what that means is we don't have a whole lot of people that are experienced in managing people. That's not something we do much. And yet, that's one of the primary things that administrators are asked to do, and that is manage people. So we don't have a lot of models. We don't even have a tremendous amount of vision here. And I think that was part of the issue for me in the early years of administrating a school. I had a vision for what teaching looked like, but not so much what effective serving administration looked like. So this weekend is a chance for us to talk about the administrative part. We've done lots of teachers' workshops and seminars and so on. This is a first for us in a lot of ways. And we've done a couple of classes here and there. But this is a first in getting together administrators and talking about administration. So what I want to do this evening, instead of shuffleboard, is to talk about five questions that I think it's imperative that administrators take time to clarify the answers to and then just relentlessly communicate these answers. To our parents, to our students, to our boards, and so on. So what are these five questions? Well, the first one why does our school exist? The first generation of Mennonite schools were started for primarily negative reasons. The way we answered this question, why does our school exist, was primarily so that our children didn't have to go to public school. Negative answers to this question do not give a compelling reason to exist very long. And it's vital that if this is the kind of a motivating driving purpose for us, that it changes into something more positive and more robust. Why do we exist? We started schools because we really did, there was a vision. But you know, in the years since we started schools, we've had a lot of rude awakenings. We found that schools take a whole lot more money and a whole lot more time and a whole lot more energy than we anticipated putting into them. And in addition to that, there's some horror stories out there, and there's been a whole lot of disappointments, and a whole lot of things didn't go the way that we dreamed they were going to go. And we find ourselves here 20, 30 years later, not sure that we even have enough vision to carry on in some cases. Our schools are in trouble. That's what I'm hearing. I have a sister-in-law that says she wouldn't send her children to school because of the painful experiences she had as a student in one of our Christian schools. And those stories can be multiplied over and over again. Okay, this is a bit of the legacy of 30 years of doing school. What's our vision? Why do we exist? This is a question we're going to have to know the answer to in vivid color. And it's not just the way we would answer it. How are our parents answering it? How is our board answering it? And the answer to this question includes two big components. The one component has to do with what we do. See, it exists to do what? So what we do is one component of this question. We generally call that our mission. What is our mission? What is it that we do? A second component of this question has to do with why we do it. And that's what we call vision. And both are important. Okay, so what do we do? And what do we envision is going to happen as a result of what we're doing? The board of Faith Builders and the leadership team there just spent a long weekend together here toward the end of February. And these were the two big questions that we were, the two sub-questions of that one, that we were spending the weekend working on. And we did a number of things to lead up to that, including discussions as a staff. But we spent quite a bit of time just really wrestling with this question. What are we doing? Why does Faith Builders exist? To do what? And why? What do we hope happens 10 years down the road, 20 years down the road as a result? And the results of that discussion don't seem that earth-shattering or anything like this. Here's just a simple little statement that came out of that discussion. Faith Builders Educational Programs serves the conservative Anabaptist community. Excuse me, that's not the one I want to read. Faith Builders Educational Program serves the church by training students. Now, note that's not much there, but that's what we do. That's why we exist. But it went on, notice, to answer that second part of the question, the vision. It says this, the Faith Builders Board envisions FBP helping to develop people who love God supremely, are prepared for a lifetime of Spirit-filled service, are humble, competent, and faithful church members, provide resources for ministries of the church, understand the times, and are prepared to engage effectively. This is what we do. Here's why we do it. This is the vision. This is what we hope what we're doing contributes to our churches and communities. If any successful venture is going to have a compelling answer to this question. One of the things I've found it helpful to do, and you hear that in this statement here, but is to ask the question, when our students graduate from our school, what kind of skills do we want them to have? What knowledge do we want them to have? What kind of commitments do we want them to have made? What kind of attitudes would we like to see present? And to actually spend time trying to answer that question. All of these are subsets of this first question. Why does our school exist? A second question that we need to answer, and that is, for what results are we accountable? What results are going to be evaluated? Now, for a lot of schools, my observation is that this isn't much. I've heard one person say that, you know, if our students don't get into fights, our parents will be happy. I'd like to offer you a statement from someone who was not involved in Christian education or education at all, who's involved in business, Peter Drucker. He said this, nonprofits, and that's what our schools are, nonprofits need management even more than business does, precisely because they lack the discipline of the bottom line. We don't have the bottom financial line to keep us accountable. So what does keep us accountable? That's the question here. And I suspect this is not one where there's much of a clear picture. What results should our boards hold us accountable for? Somebody want to answer that? That may be a question for us to work on in a discussion. What are the specific things they should hold us accountable for as administrators? Tony Campolo says that, you know, Tony Campolo was Italian. He said he lived in a community with quite a few Jewish people. And he said growing up, so there was a big difference between the way his mama treated him and his Jewish friends' mamas treated them. He said, this is the way it worked. He said, when we'd leave for school in the morning, he said, my Jewish friends, the mother would come to the door and she would holler out and she'd ask them, hey, do you have your books? He said, when I left home, my mama would come to the door and she would say, Tony, do you have your lunchbox? We're like the Italians. What is it that we should be evaluating in terms of our schools? What are the things that we should hold our schools accountable for? We need to find the answer to that question. A third question. Who are we serving? Now that may seem like a fairly obvious question answer. I'm going to add one more word to it, and that is primarily. Who are we serving primarily? Now that we serve a lot. Schools serve a lot of people. We serve our boards. We serve the students that are in our school. As administrators, hopefully we serve our staff. We serve the parents of our students. There are a lot of different people that we serve. I'm asking, of all those possibilities, which group is the one we're primarily serving? As a young teacher, I functionally understood the answer to be, it's my students. And so I began to see myself as an advocate for my students, which is a good thing. But it was an advocate for my students against their parents, which wasn't a good thing. And this is where the tension often lies. Are we primarily serving parents? Are we primarily serving students? I suggest that is a question that we really need to answer carefully. Sometimes we can serve both and there's no conflict, but not always. Our schools are different than churches and homes in that they do not have any innate authority. The only authority that our schools have, I'm convinced, is a delegated. It's a derived authority. And we need to think carefully about what that means for how we answer this question. A fourth question we need to be clear on is, which way do we turn the paper? What are our values? What is it that's non-negotiable for us? What is it that we'll close the school down over? Now, this isn't mission. This isn't what we're doing. This isn't our vision, why we're doing it. It's the underlying commitments we've made that we're not going to give up. This is where we begin to say, to ask the question, what? How are our values different than the values of Baptist Bible Academy down the street? What's different about us? What is it that our parents value? What is it that our boards value? One of the things that I just really admire about the way that Gerald administrates the school there at Faith Builders is that I hear him in a number of venues, particularly our parent-teacher conferences, giving opportunities to hear directly from the parents. And I actually even kind of insist hearing negative stuff sometimes. Sometimes I wince a little bit, particularly at some of the patron council meetings, at how much he begs for, go ahead and tell us the stuff that we don't really want to hear. But what is valued? What is it that the school has always valued that I'm a part of? There's two prongs to this. When we're asked about values, one is, what is it that the staff values? That you as administrator and your staff, what do you value? And then what does the community that is supporting the school value? And those aren't always the same thing. But it's important that they're talking, that those values are meshing. If I were, I'm not a principal of a day school anymore, not an administrator. But I think that's one thing, if I were to go back and relive those years, it's one thing I would do a lot more of. And that's a lot more listening to the people that are involved, that are making the school happen, and ask them, what is it that's important to you? I do know that this isn't always easy. And it's not always, it doesn't always seem like it translates into something really practical and useful. And maybe that's why we struggle to ask this question sometimes. I tell you, 2 weeks ago, it was in a room with 20 ministers, and we were asking the question, talk to us about what you value and how Faith Builders is doing with those values. And that was one of the toughest meetings of my life, because it wasn't what we were hearing wasn't just a lot of pats on the back and everything's great and wonderful. It was, you know, we value this and we value this, and we're not sure FB's doing so well in that. But we need to hear it. What do we value? And then a final question. What is our plan? One of the things that I'm convinced is hurting our schools is the lack of long-range planning. I see a lot of one-year planning, but not a whole lot of 10-year planning going on. And part of that is because we're not even sure if we're going to be there for another year or two or three. And that's part of the reason we need commitments for administrators to give themselves for 10, 15, 20 years Should we have an altar call at this point? What's our plan? If we understand what our mission is and why we're doing that, what is our plan for moving our school more and more toward that picture, that vision of what we have? What is our plan? I was administrator, started 22, and it was just going to be 1 year. I had asked Cynthia to marry me, and I figured it would probably be better to spend my first year making a little money than going to school and shelling it out. And so I went to teach. And during that year, I found out I really did enjoy teaching. So I decided that, well, maybe I should do a little bit more of this before I go back to school. So I went to the school board. And I asked the school board, what would it take for you to be okay with this school going more toward, we were an individualized school. Would you be okay with us moving toward a conventional classroom model? And I said, because if you have any interest in that, I'll take back my 1 year commitment and maybe make it longer term. And they said, well, you know, we were just waiting for an offer like that. And so they said, why don't you come up with a plan? And that's what we did as a staff. We sit down and we began looking through curriculum. And, you know, over the next several years, and we did a phase in, but there was something about that planning together, envisioning together, and then implementing that plan that really kept things kind of hopping. There was excitement, there was energy that doesn't exist when there's no plan in place, no forward look. What is our plan? What's our plan for helping the students that we have that are struggling academically? What is our plan for improving the quality of our science program? What is our plan for increasing parental involvement in the school? What's our plan for increasing the pay for teachers? What is our plan for equipping our board to be a board? And there is a way to do that. What is our plan for integrating a good practical life skills course into the curriculum? I mean, we could just go on and on and on. What is your plan? I would recommend that one of the things we commit ourselves to doing, and I would imagine many of you already do this, but that is, as administrators, commit yourself to an annual report and plan that is given to the board. This is a report on what is, and here is our plan for the next year. Here's our plan for the next 5 years. While we're planning, and I offer this for just a few of you, this may not be for everyone, but in our planning, one thing to consider are what some people call BHAGs. That's big, hairy, audacious goals. I don't think we dream enough in our schools. We don't see the possibilities. I think of a school like the Logos Academy in Moscow, Idaho, that, 25 years ago didn't exist. But one person decided that he did not want to send his children to public school, and so he begins to decide which of the Christian schools in his area he's going to send them to, and he says, I don't really like what's happening in any of these. Well, how would you do a Christian school if you really wanted to do a Christian school right? And he began thinking about this and reading, and he read an essay by Dorothy Sayers, The Lost Tools of Learning, and he started getting excited. Well, you know, that school today, just some 20 years later, not only is a fully functioning school, but it is a curriculum publisher. They do a lot with classical Christian education. Just all kinds of things happening there from just the school because they had a vision that went a bit beyond the students. Now, they want to do really well with their students, but they have a larger vision than that. They have a big, hairy, audacious goal. Well, I wonder if some of our schools shouldn't have some of those as well as part of the overall plan for what they're doing. We've talked about five questions. Five questions that it's really imperative that as administrators, we're taking the time to ask the questions, to clarify the answers to the question, not just the way I answer them, but the way we answer them, and then to communicate those relentlessly, just over and over and over, keeping this is in front of us, this guides us as we make decisions. This is big. There's one author who calls these one of the obsessions, the answering of these questions, one of the obsessions of an extraordinary executive or administrator. Now, maybe just a few comments here yet. I do know that we are a very practical people. And so when we think about schools, the first thing we think about are teachers. You have to have teachers if you're going to do schools. We think about textbooks. We're going to have textbooks for our schools. And we need a building, a place to do this. And that just fits us well. And if we have those three things, we can do school. The five questions don't really fit in those nice, practical categories. These are not things that can be done in quite the same way. And yet, it is in the answering of these five questions, it's in the realm of those ideas that I think can take us much further as schools. Now, this is a bit of an aside, but most of us here are married men. And I suspect that if we put a lot of energy into answering these five questions for our schools and never really answered those five questions for our homes and our families, our wives might take issue with us. But these are five good questions to be asking in terms of our families. Why does our family exist? What are the values that we have as a family? What are the things I, as a father or as a mother, ought to be held accountable for in terms of my family? What's our plan for pursuing our vision as a family? Well, back to schools. I do believe that our schools deserve administrators that are willing to give passionate energy to leading well, and that leading well is going to involve answering and communicating these five questions. Two resources I'll just end with that might be helpful here. These questions, in a little different form than what I've given you, are covered in a book called The Five Most Important Questions You Will Ever Ask About Your Organization, and it is written by Peter Drucker. The Five Most Important Questions You'll Ever Ask About Your Organization. If you want some additional help in fleshing out these questions, that would be a resource for you. In addition, I would mention also a book by Jim Collins, Good to Great. And again, it has nothing to do with schools. It's about businesses. But about businesses who take seriously answering these questions and what the results are as they do. I think with that, Gerald, I'm going to go ahead and turn it back over to you.
What's that?
What's the
title of that second?
Oh, Good to Great.
Thank you, Steve. Steve lives what he talks about when it comes to this, so it was good, it was refreshing to hear these five questions put to us. This is not easily done. If it's done well, it's done with a lot of people involved, and that makes it that much more difficult. And I think that's one reason why it doesn't get off the ground so often in our schools. There's a certain rallying of the troops that has to happen to get to these big questions. We tend to think about the next moment, the fact that I don't have a high school teacher next year, the fact that I don't have this or that or the other thing going on, and we get stuck there. So it's a good call for us. Loving our work, living our mission, vision, and values. All right. Well, we're going to talk about what you heard in just a few moments. All of you administrators know that one of the things you should think about doing as a minister is to delegate. We've asked three men tonight as they got here. We blessed them with a surprise of leading a group. And we're going to break into groups of about seven, and we'd invite the couples. We'll just include you as couple, okay, Diana? All right? We'll just leave that one alone now, so you're always part of the couple thing. To simply discuss several questions, and we'll get to that in just a moment. First, I'd like to do just a few announcements here before I give a few instructions for the discussion groups, and then we'll get right to it. Matthew, I'd like you to talk to us about afterward tomorrow morning, because this is our last time we're really all together. Be lots of time together, but not in a group like this.
Yeah, well, after the discussion groups,
come up here and join me.
For the most current Faith Builders recordings, visit christianlearning.org. And for more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit the docforlearning.org.